So guys, welcome to the Diabetes Chat this week. Our guest speaker is Tiernan. He is a stand-up comedian, writer, podcaster, actor, and on his website, his words not mine, a very amateur juggler. He also is a very tired dad. I know that feeling. Like I said, that's his words not mine. Diagnosed when he was 4 with type 1, I believe. I have been stalking you, Tiernan.
That's impressive work, yeah.
I've done my research. You've performed all over the world, in all over the sort of comedy clubs and theatres. Some of your work includes, which is awesome, guys, is writing for CBeebies, Hey Dougie. Awesome. Yeah. I need to watch that episode. My son really loves them sort of cartoons, so I will definitely watch that this week. You write for...
A new one coming out in a couple of weeks.
So, nice. Yeah. You wrote, or you still write for Frankie Boyle, is that right?
Yeah.
Nice one. And you've also played... a part in season 3 of Channel 4's Fresh Meat.
Yes, a very minor role, but it was a lot of fun, yeah.
So there you go, guys. After tonight's chat, or when you're listening back after the podcast, you can go check out Hey Dougie, watch a bit of Frankie Ball, and I'm sure it'll be some of Tinin's material, and you can watch his little cameo appearance in season 4's Fresh Meat.
It's quite a mixed bag for the ages there, isn't there?
There's it is, yeah.
Something for 5-year-olds and something for over 18s all at once.
A bit for everyone. I love it. And also, I think you did some comedy politics sort of stuff as well, I believe.
I did, yeah. So I've stepped back a bit from... I used to a podcast that was a comedy politics podcast, and kind of as a spin-off from working with Frankie, really. But I've sort of stepped back from all that to focus on kids' stuff, because I've been writing more and more. So as I said, I've got another Hey Dougie episode out on... It'll be on the iPlayer on September 25th, and I'm currently writing on another CBB series that I'm not allowed to talk about, or I'll be taken out by the CBB's top secret operatives.
Ooh, we don't want that. Don't want that.
And I'm having a lot of fun writing about things that aren't miserable, like our government. So it's really good at the moment. This is why I said I've sort of stepped away from Twitter. I'm just writing kids stuff and going, oh, actually, there's really lovely
having,
things.
Just
happening.
Having a it's laugh. Great, yeah. Having a laugh. Love it.
That's it, which is nice.
Yeah, and also, like you say, you co-host, you co-run and write for the Comedy Club for Kids with your weekly podcast called Radio Nonsense. And later on with Gary, we'll go into a bit more detail about your careers, all them sort of things. Cool. So obviously, welcome along.
Thank you for having me. It's a delight. And I love your jingle. It's properly good.
Should we press it again?
Would you mind? I enjoyed it so much.
Or should we have this one? It's not quite 8 o'clock, but let's do this one.
It's Monday evening, 8 p.m, and you're listening to Diabetes Chat.
That is wonderful.
I think what we should do, before we finish at the end, I think you should record us a jingle or two as well.
I would so love to do that. That would
and,
be fantastic.
And you will be one of our voices that will just be airing Diabetes Chat every so on a Monday night.
That's the legacy I want. Hey Dougie can go away. I want that legacy.
Yeah, Hey Dougie, Frankie. Hey Dougie, Frankie Boyle, season 3 of Channel 4's Fresh Meat, cameo appearance, comedy, political, all that sort of podcast jazz, writing for Comedy Kids, and also a voiceover for Jingle Guy for Diabetes Chat.
Yeah, that's the most important one. I'll put that top of the CV every time.
Hey, I want that on your website. I've seen your list of things. So guys, welcome along Diabetes Chat. I think tonight's going to be really good fun. So what we're going to do is I'm going to get my questions before we get going. So we're going to break this into 2 or 3 parts over the next hour. I know you've come away from holiday. Well, you just got back from holiday, so I bet you're shattered as well. So round one is sort of a quick fire round of questions.
Before you start, I was just going to say, I think I'm going to be all right, but I am jet lagged. So if every now and then I just fade out in the middle of a sentence, just shout loudly and I'll come back. I'll be all right.
Tiernan! Or...
yeah, that's it.
Or
fine.
Flipper plays different sound effects, don't you, Flipper, off your iPhone. So I'm sure you'll wake us up. And I'm shattered. I'm back at work
perfect,
today. So I'm sure... Thank you. So we've got that's loads funny. Of different sound effects. There we go. It will keep us just alerted, I guess. Round one is we're just going to get to know you a little bit with our 90-second questions. Our 90-second questions normally last about 90 minutes in our world because we just keep talking. But I'm going to try and keep it short because I want to move on to the next round, which we'll talk about your diabetes journey and when you were diagnosed and that sort of stuff. And then we're going to talk about your career and what you've done over the years, but also then bring it back to diabetes because obviously that's why we're here as well, and how you sort of manage your diabetes while you're working in these sort of busy lifestyles. And then if we get time, we'll talk a little bit about peer support, mental health and all that jazz. So let's go for round one. We'll make this super, super quick. So what I want to do, Tyrion, is super quick answers, like without like thinking for like 10 minutes. And shall we go? Let's go.
Let's go for it. I'm feeling ready for this. Let's go.
I don't know. Can you hear me with the music as well playing? Let's have a look. What is your name and occupation?
I can hear you. My name is Tyrion Nduyev, and I am a writer and comedian. That's it. That's all I've got. Yeah.
When were you diagnosed with diabetes? How old were you?
Oh, I was 4 years old, which was 38 years ago.
Ooh, nearly at the 40 marker. Do you finger prick or use smart technology?
I use smart tech. Do you mean I've got a Libra? That's the
Libra.
Smart,
yeah, that's the smart of it. Yeah. When you finger prick, did you change the lancets every day?
No, absolutely not.
Do you use insulin pen or pump? And which do you prefer?
Pump. I'm on a pump, and I really prefer it. It's brilliant. I'm a big fan.
What pump are you on?
I'm on. I've just got a Medtronic 780G, which I'll talk about later. I got it 3 weeks ago, and the nurse said you can't use it till you've had your induction. But I programmed it myself in the morning, and I've been using it since. I love it.
Of course, so you have.
Yeah.
Are you hypo aware?
What's that? That's when I know when I'm about to get hypo, isn't it?
Yes. What symptoms do you have?
I normally talk a load of rubbish. I get quite hot. I start spacing out a little bit. I just feel generally very weak. But normally my wife knows immediately. She goes, "You're talking rubbish. You're going low." And she knows the second.
She's got your back.
The conversation goes weird.
She's got your back. What's your go-to hypo treatment?
No. Well, I don't know what that is, so probably nothing. What's my go-to hypo treatment? Sorry,
yeah.
I misheard that. It's two jelly babies, exactly two.
Ooh.
For the 10 grams of carb hits. If I'm going super low, four jelly babies. That's
Ooh.
Right. I've got the maths,
Working. And what colours? Any specific or any ones like, oh no, definitely not?
I'll take whichever is at the top of the pack. I'm not fussy.
Some people have actually mentioned it, that no certain colours, yellow or whatever, no. Anyway, what do you think's worse, Tyrion? Do you think feeling hypo, so low, or hyper high? What's worse for you?
Do you know what? I'm gonna say hyper, because when I'm hyper, at least I go, right, well, I can have some jelly babies to fix this. Whereas when I'm hyper, I'm like, this just feels awful.
And absolutely.
It took me a while to knock it down. It's not as fun. It means I have to, like, you know... The action you have to take for a hyper is way less fun than for a hypo.
Absolutely. One thing you like about diabetes, one thing you don't like about diabetes.
Do you know what? I like that it's... I've said this sort of before, really, but like, I've got a mate who's got asthma who lived on a hill and can never walk up his own road. And I like that with diabetes, I've generally done what I like with it, which is great. One thing I hate is, having just come back from holiday, I hate how much stuff I have to pack. I hate all the extra things that I have to stick in a bag, which is so many, like, cannulas and infusion sets and Libra sets, and they're all in big boxes. And it's so annoying.
And you pack it all, and then you get to the airport, and then you have to unpack it to go through all the machines.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's like,
come on. It's just so irritating. And just make someone needs to WinZip diabetic supplies. I don't know how they do that, but that would be a genius invention.
Do you love or hate the smell of insulin?
Oh, no, I don't like it, you know. I should be used to it by now, but it's so medical, isn't it? It's so clinical. I don't like it.
Yeah. And last one. If you're on a desert island, what three things would you take? And on your desert island, You've got all your diabetes supplies there, so your Libra and your Medtronic and all that sort of stuff, and your mixed bag of coloured jelly babies, your twos and fours in pairs ready for you. You've got all your diabetes kit. What three things would you take? What other things?
I'd need definitely like I don't know if this counts as two things, but I'd need like some headphones and good a music source. Does that count as two things?
Or we'll give us one
combined.
Yeah.
Then a notepad for scribbling ideas and a big bag of crisps. Oh, I suppose I'd have to rush
unlimited.
It, but I wouldn't be able to.
Could be an unlimited bag of crisps somehow.
Okay, that's perfect. I like that. That's very good. Yeah.
So there you go.
I like this island already. I'm moving in. If it's unlimited, I might get shipwrecked ASAP.
So there you go. That is our 90-second questions. I think we did pretty well there.
That was good. You've also made me really think they should do flavoured insulin just for the smell difference.
Oh my god!
Like, I think if I had a bottle of insulin that can smell like strawberry or something, like they do with vapes or whatever, it would be so much nicer, wouldn't it?
Oh my gosh! What do you guys think? Who's listening in? With Dan's got a laughing emoji there, 100%, 100% Gary as well.
Oh, a lot of 100%. Yeah, oh my that's gosh. Right.
You never know. There's a market there. Maybe who knows? Maybe that'll be Parfa's next goal. Once he's cracked closed loop with the NHS, he might turn into flavored smell insulin. Who knows?
Perfect.
I believe insulin smell different, but that's just me. I know that Deidre smell.
Like different brands.
Yeah.
Oh, do they? Oh, you see, I'm on Nova Rapid, and it's super clean. It immediately smells like I've sort of walked into a hospital room. So are there better brands? What should you be getting? Whether it works for you or not, what should you be getting for the smell? What's the best smelling incident?
I don't know, but I do believe there are different smells. I know Lancaster definitely smelled different to the Traceba and things like that, but now I'm on a pump as well.
You need to smell test. We need to line them up like little shot glasses. Everyone can have a whiff and we'll rate them out of 10.
There you go. The next social we do.
We have to. I do sometimes think we do insulin wine, like talk about insulin like wines on this podcast. Yeah.
Some people have actually tasted it, haven't they? When we've had previous guest speakers, they've actually tasted it. Diabetes Chat do not advocate for any of this.
What did they say it tastes like? So I bet it's not nice, right?
I can't remember what they said now. But I wouldn't even want to do that. Anyway, no. So it is time to learn a little bit more about your journey with diabetes. When you were diagnosed, you obviously said you were 4 years old. So obviously you remember every second of it, I'm sure. just like my 3-year-old now. He remembers things from like a while ago. But if I say, what did you do today? Or he's like, I don't know. It's like he completely forgets.
Yeah, that's exactly the same. My daughter's 5 and does exactly the same. She can't remember anything from the past 2 or 3 days, but will somehow remember what jumper you had on like 3 years ago. It doesn't make sense.
Absolutely.
I don't know how brains work at that age. Yeah.
So obviously you were diagnosed at 4 years old. What symptoms did you have at that time? What did your parents, or how were you diagnosed? How was that recognized? Like,
I was weeing like a mouse just for eternity, and I lost a lot of weight very quickly.
Yeah.
And I think it was only, I think it was about a week of these symptoms before my parents rushed me to a GP. It might not have even been away. I've not really got a clue what the timescale was, but I know they said it was a good few days before realizing it was something definitely weird. And that was when they rushed me to the GP, and the GP rushed me to A&E, that's what I've heard.
There was no sort of past experience of knowing diabetes in your family, whether your parents knew about it or people they in the family that had diabetes know. So were you the first one?
Well, there was, but it was like several generations back. So my grandma's grandma had it. She was type 1.
I'm trying to draw the family tree now.
My grandma's grandma, she was type 1. My granddad's type 2. But it was sort of on my grandma's side, but like various generations back. there's sort of without sort of getting too sad early on, but I had a loss. I lost a brother when I was four, and he was two, which was obviously. I mean, it's weird to talk about it now. I don't really remember it or remember him very well, sadly. But they sort of say the shock of that was what helped bring it on, because it was quite soon after that that I became diabetic.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's first I've sort of heard that, but wow, okay.
I mean, as whether or not there's anything
who knows stress and
very rapid thing after my brother passed away that I became diagnosed, and that was obviously the suggestion at the time may have been
obviously must have been a very challenging time for your parents to obviously go through that sort of situation with your brother, and then for you to be diagnosed with diabetes, like it's a complete life change. And we'll go on shortly about the sort of things that you used and how you administered insulin and all that sort of stuff. How long were you in hospital for?
I have no idea. I just remember getting to watch Spider-Man His Amazing Friends on the TV in the ward, and that being brilliant.
Was that on like 38 years ago?
Yeah, it was like Spider-Man His Amazing Friends. Well, it's not the Disney Plus new one where they've messed it up. It was Spider-Man, Firestar and Iceman, the classic one. And I don't know, they had it on a telly in the war. Wow. I just remember being able to watch it with the other kids and it being an absolute highlight.
It was worth being diagnosed diabetes so you could just watch Spider-Man, right?
That's right, yeah. Absolutely.
So do you know just sort of how your parents felt at that time? Like how was it for them? Like, I guess family life like really changed. Like, any sort of perspective you recall from conversations with them? Or
yeah, I know. I mean, it's sort of they hated, you know, as I'm sure every parent has you know, that's got diabetic kids has done, having to inject your kid. Mm. What a just a horrible, awful thing to have to do.
Yeah.
And I think it really stress them out. But I mean, I was having a conversation with my nan, who is 96, which is 98. I've just not 2 years off of that. She's 98 this year. And she was telling me she remembers very much looking after me at a very young, I must have been like 4.5, 5, and her having to do my injection and being very worried. And I basically just pulled my trousers down, went, stick it in my bum, there, goes there, do it. And she was just completely shocked at how kind of fine with it all I was. Which I thought was hilarious.
You know what, you've answered my next question. I was going to say, any memorable moments, and there you go. Like, do you still do that now, turn in with your wife? You say to your wife, hey, get that needle. And
just go up and down the road and just shout it and see who's up for it. No, luckily I went to a diabetic camp, a juvenile diabetes camp when I was 7, which I remember it was like a week away. I can't remember where it was, but I know we got to go to Alton Towers, I think. Oh, no, it was American Adventure. And we all, like, learnt to inject ourselves there. So each day would be learning to inject in a different place and stuff. And I remember that being massive, because up until that point, I just hadn't done it.
Did you inject?
But then suddenly I was with all these other kids, and we all had to do it before breakfast. And all together, it was brilliant.
I bet that was quite cool, wasn't it, being with, like, sort of people going through the same sort of thing? Because I remember when I was diagnosed at 17, like, I suddenly was the odd one out, I guess, from my friends. And whereas I guess like going to like a camp sort of thing like that, you're normalizing things and seeing people around you doing exactly the same, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a massive help. So I think I was definitely sort of the odd one out at school. No one else at my school had diabetes. And I, you know, sort of fond memories. I always had to go to the welfare room at 10:30 a.m. every morning and got to have a chocolate biscuit and a chocolate digestive and talk to the welfare lady. And I often missed maths, which is brilliant. I was well pleased with that. But then, it was the first time really at 7 that I'd met other people who had it.
Yeah.
And it was great. And it was activities every day. So I think we went sailing one day and all this stuff that I'd never got to do before.
Yeah.
On the basis that we were all blood testing kind of with military precision at points through the day and doing our injections all together. And, you know, it was
that's
brilliant.
Great. It's great to hear, isn't it? It's really nice to hear. And when you hear different diabetes camps and hearing people do them sort of things, that's great. And obviously the double hashtag winning there, that you got to skip maths. And you got a chocolate biscuit at the end of it. And
it's pretty great.
You obviously know your 2x tables if you can do your jelly babies and twos and twos fours. So
yeah, but I never move beyond that. That's the problem.
So you never go up to 6 jelly babies, right?
No. Oh my goodness. No, I wouldn't dream of it. Terrifying.
Love it. Brilliant stuff, guys. Let's have a look at the next question. What about growing up then with diabetes? Obviously, you're 4 years old. You went, obviously, primary school, that sort of stuff, teenage years, and sort of beyond, really. Like, any sort of challenges that along the way? Like, was it just normal life, I guess? Or were things hard at certain points, like growing up or telling people?
I was just rubbish at it as a teenager and adult at university. I didn't take anywhere near as much care of myself with my insulin. I sort of rebelled against it. I really hated that it was such an important part of my life. And I just didn't blood test as much as I should have done. I was having too much fun, really, in life. And I didn't check carbohydrates often. I had a NovaPen by that point, and I used it. I did all my injections, I did my blood test, but I didn't carb count properly. Wanted to ignore it a lot. And it took a few years to kind of snap out. I think it took quite a stern word from my doctor a couple of years, pretty much the year after I left uni, actually, to kind of really snap me out of it. Make me realize that I needed to kind of get on board with it. But I mean, it's stupid things. It's hard as well, because I think as I understand, young people now aren't as being as reckless, but I very much enjoyed drinking. I very much enjoyed drinking and going out with my mates, and didn't have a clue how much, what was in booze and how to deal with it properly. And just sort of injected and got on with it.
Yeah. I was 17 and then in my last year of high school, sixth form, and then I had a couple of years out and then went to uni. And at that stage, I just wanted to be normal. I want to be one of the lads, want to go out each night, and you know what I mean, I did what I needed to do. My diabetes, I tried to look after myself as best as I can in that moment. I wasn't being totally like neglectful of it, but my priority in that time of life was, you know what I mean, I just want to be a normal 21 year old going to uni with my mates, having a great time, going out, you know what I mean.
Well, that's your priority. And I mean, I think also to try and give myself and yourself some credit, maybe, I don't know, I was just more active in general at that age, so I think it was easier to get away. I mean, I regret it, but I think I got away with it more because I was doing various sports classes and running around all over the place. You know, I wasn't sitting on my bum like I do now, and I wasn't scuffing, you know. So I think my metabolism was much better then. So I think I got away with it, but it wasn't good. And I'm pleased. I'm pleased I had a moment where I will always
remember when I was diagnosed and the training sort of nurses and saying, if you do drinking, because I was obviously 17, I was like drinking at that stage, 18, I guess. I always remember when I was going to uni, they were saying, always remember when you come home after you've had a boozy night out, always have some carbs, some bread or something. So I was like, you know what, that's just a good excuse to get a kebab, isn't it, on the way home after a night out, right?
Yeah, that's it. But also then that didn't take in, because I have one like memory, this is a bad memory, but I remember it also shows how old, it's mainly a bad memory because it shows how old I am, but I remember going to a nightclub and like they were doing free vodka, or it's like vodka Red Bull shots for £1. I didn't know what Red Bull was, and so me and my mates just went, hey, let's have loads, and I was high for about 3 days. I think I was I remember getting lost on like Oxford. I'm a born and bred Londoner. I got lost on Oxford Street because I was flying, and it was looking back, awful at the time. I had no idea what was in it. And I suppose also there wasn't carbs on everything like there is now, and I didn't have constant glucose monitoring, so I was just winging it an awful lot of the time.
So you obviously mentioned about your pens. So what sort of things have you administered over the years since you were four? I assume, was it maybe syringes and things like that?
Yeah. It started with syringes for quite a few years. And those little blood test kits that looked like a catapult firing a small lancet into your finger, which was terrifying.
Yes.
And then that moved into NovaPens. My favourite one was the silver one because it looked kind of like a James Bond device that, you know, it looks like a pen, actually a syringe. And then I was on pens really pretty much until my first pump, which, oh gosh, I can't remember what it was. Was it an AccuCheck? It was rubbish. It was really rubbish. That was only So I've just got my third pump. So it would have been 12 years. No, yeah, 2010, I think I got my first pump.
Yeah.
And it was not great. I didn't find it really good. And then once I moved on to the Medtronic 4 years later, it's all become so much easier, I think.
Yeah.
And obviously now on Libras rather than various different finger pricking devices,
What sort of finger pricking things you had then, I guess, was it like the O-rings, stuff like that back in the day?
Yeah. All the way through the different ones that kind of hide the needle, and then there's ones with the 8 different needles in that spin. You know, they're all the different types. And I don't know. It's so weird thinking about it now, because now I'm, you know, I've been on Libra for a little while, and my fingers were just like hot. And I felt like I could sort of just do with the tips of my fingers, I could just pick up burning hot things or whatever. Like you've got some sort of soldering gloves on from all the finger pricks.
Oh my goodness!
And I finally feel like my hands are sort of normal again. It's really weird.
So do you definitely think that since you went on to Libra, then it's really changed your life? Like impacted much better? Like what's your experiences of using the sort of Libras? Do you think it has been a game changer for you?
Yeah, massively. That and the pump have been incredible game changers for me, because I think the control, well, is partly the control I have over it, but also being able to see. And I think, as I said, my life's changed. Sort of, I'm not gigging anywhere near as much as I was, but I was having a big problem in particular that when I was going on stage, my sugars would rise for about 2 hours because of the adrenaline. And then they'd take about 2 hours to come down. And I'd talk to my doctor about, well, I can do insulin before, but I'd try that. And then I'd go low on stage and that would be terrible because I need to be, you know, and kind of the zone I needed to be in, I kind of needed my sugars to just do their thing. But that was not good for my HbA1 and not good for me. And with the pump, I was finally able to go, right, I can just increase it by 10% or 20% over this period of time, knowing how long I'm going to be on stage. And it suddenly changed. Like my HbA1 has just dropped massively, because I was having that 3 or 4 times a week, not having that peak. And being able to see on the Libra exactly when it was peaking. And I had like a weird moment at 3 in the morning where I was suddenly dropping. And I'd never really noticed. I was obviously just sleeping through it. And then suddenly the Libra is showing me that, oh, no, you should really, really lower your insulin. They're just these little, I don't know, these little insights I had no idea about before. And it was just showing up really on the HbA1s at the end, you know, where the control had kind of been bad.
Absolutely. It's just great, isn't it? And now you're on hyperglucose loop?
No. I'm going to complain for a minute. I'm meant to be. So I've got the 780G, and my doctor, who my brilliant doctor at the Whittington, left in April, and in March she said we'll get you on the closed loop system, and she's now left. But when I got the pump in August, they went, oh no, you're not on that. You haven't qualified for it. So it was just before I went on holiday, so I'm about to write them lots of stern letters this week now that I've got back, complaining about it, because that's what I was told and I was very excited about it. So
yeah.
I feel a little bit let down by it.
And that's the next big thing, isn't it? Like we've seen recently with all the stuff like PATH is doing, and the document will be coming out hopefully next couple of months, and you can see hopefully the 5-year rollout to see where diabetes care is hopefully going. And obviously the great thing about it hopefully is that people will have that choice, so when hopefully people can go, right, you can have that or that. But there's so many amazing like things with hyperglucose loop, just like being able to, like you say, suspend your insulin or help you out in certain situations, like if you're getting like high peaks in certain points, or dawn phenomena. Yeah. There's so many amazing things. Let's have a look.
So I was going to say, very selfishly, I was hoping I'd have it for my holiday, because it would have made things so much easier. Like that. I don't know if you sort of deal with that, but when you change time zone, trying to work out the exact point to change the time on your pump is a really tricky. And I've never worked it out. I've never managed to get it right. Oh. There's nearly always a day or so of chaos.
Flipper. Let's bring you in a second. Do you find that with your pump when you're traveling? Like, is it difficult to sink it in?
I have to be totally honest. I've only really been in Europe, so you're only an hour difference. And when I went to Australia and things, I was on pens.
Right.
And it is chaos for the first day or so, just because yeah, your day's your night's your day. And on pens, obviously, you've got long acting in there and switching that. So, no, I can't help you on that. You need somebody who's better travelled than me.
That's fair.
So let's have a look. Thanks, Philippa. Obviously, I said that in our intro that you are a dad, you're a parent, a tired dad. High five to that. How old's your daughter? You say five?
She is five, yeah.
And does she know much more, like, about your diabetes? Does she know, like, that you're sort of sweets at certain points? Or does she know that you've got this magic machine on you? Like, my son, he's totally, like, really gets it. He's 3 years old, and he knows my smart pens, because I'm on MDI, that I inject, and he knows, like, sweets, like, certain sweets, Skittles or Haribo's, Jelly Babies, they're daddy sweets, and he always calls them medicines. I'm just wondering, sort of, your perspective now from, did your daughter have much, does she know about it? Does she have much involvement? Yeah. Or, like,
well, it's a big, son, she's,
it's
yeah,
big for you,
she's
isn't
very
it?
Like, and she knows. I'll show her on my Libra, like, oh, it's in the red. What does that mean? Daddy needs sweets. It's like, she knows now. She's really well programmed for it. She doesn't quite, grasp how many sweets. Like, she'll go, no. I'll get you a sweet. She'll give me, like, one Smartie. I'll be like, that is not going to cut it. You need to get on board with these two Jelly Babies.
My son's either way. When he gives me midget gems, he just keeps feeding me. And I'm just like, I'm going to be sky high now, Harry. Thanks very much, mate.
That's amazing. Your son is clearly way more generous than my daughter. She's like, you can have one of my sweets, and that is it. But yeah, she's very aware of the pump, because I think from a very early age, when she would just grab the cord and swing it or whatever, I'd have to go, no. You know, yeah. I think there were definite moments, especially when she was sort of like one or very little, all the way up to about two, where I hadn't realised quite how dangerous pumps are when there are kids that like grabbing things around. You know, there's a little cable for them to just sort of pull on, and you have to suddenly find inventive ways to hide it.
Absolutely. It's a question for you. I put this down. I never really asked this to anyone. The ELSA study, where you can look at sort of seeing if like people in your family have diabetes. I know they do. Pathers down in, oh, I can't remember where he is now, but for children, do you think you'd ever be interested in doing that? Like for me as a family, when I've discussed it with my wife, it's a hard one. It's a hard sort of situation, thinking, would we want to know the sort of percentage risk of what Harry could maybe have? Like, obviously we've got the knowledge now of knowing symptoms and signs, but obviously that doesn't stop like him coming through and you're not seeing it. But I'm just wondering what your perspective there would be.
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it? I sort of think that it's all these things with all kind of preventative measures for anything that kids can get. I sort of see that there's it feels like it would make sense to get it. I don't know at what age, because it's sort of they can get it up to, is it up to teenage or something like that? I remember.
Yeah, I think it was 18.
Yeah, I sort of wonder if like maybe a bit older. I don't think I could take my daughter age five to go and have a finger prick just yet, unless she really needed it, because I don't I think I'd be the enemy for a long, I think this would be very angry with me for a long time. But it's sort of, I don't know, I think it's a terrifying thing to do, but it might also be a relief, whether because, you know, she's not likely to get it, or because you know and you can kind of prepare, and at least you know.
Yeah.
And it's a hard one, isn't it? I just feel like, you know, not that she'd listen to me, but if she was going to get it, I'd hopefully help her manage it better than I have done. But I mean, this is the kind of parent hope, isn't it? Clearly, she'd probably rebel all the same ways I did and get in all sorts of trouble.
I think I think the great thing is, though, I think the main point, I guess, and I'm sure you'll say, yeah, is it's great that we're in this position now in 2023, that there's options. You know what I mean? Like when we've talked about you on syringes and you had the awful guillotine thing that was firing things at you, and now we look at obviously the technology advances of the finger pricking machines to flash to CGM. We're seeing pens evolving, we're seeing smart pens, we're seeing pumps, we're seeing closed loop. Obviously there's people I'm sure working in the background trying to look at all different things, and then seeing these sort of studies and stuff. And that's what I brought before, is hopefully in time is that we see where people can have choice and options and really, you know, go to their consultant and say, you know what, I want this because I want to try this on my sort of quality of life. And I think that's the great thing, is that where we are now is there are options for people to decide what, hopefully what they want, isn't it? And I think it's really good, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think just that general understanding that we're all individual, you know, I think, When I went to the TAD talks, the talk about diabetes thing in March, I think, and I don't go to those sort of events often enough, and I'm very bad for it, but it was just fascinating to me going, oh, right, everybody here is completely and utterly different. Yeah. Everybody in here has different things that make them go high and go low and set them off. And, you know, and it's so good that we're all becoming more and more aware of that, I think. I've definitely had, rare times in the past where I've talked to other, you know, diabetics and sort of felt like, oh, wait, hang on, that doesn't work for me. Is there something wrong with me? And it's like, no, it's not that, you know, or having doctors recommended things because what it worked for the other patients. It's like, well, it doesn't work for me, you know? And I'm so pleased we're at this stage now where we know it's a condition that affects everyone individually.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely agree. Thank you so much, Tin. And that concludes our second part of the night. Again, to know you with our fun 90 second questions, and also, a delve into your sort of journey with diabetes, when you were diagnosed at 4, talking about parents' perspective from your parents, but also you as a parent for your daughter, talking about the technology and the things that you've used. I loved all the sort of memorable moments that you said. really, really good chat. Really appreciate it. So we're going to go into our next section with Gary, who's going to talk a bit about your career, get to know a little bit more about what you've sort of done over the year with the sort of intro I said before, but also bring it back to diabetes, because that's why we're here, is sort of how you sort of manage that with the sort of jobs you've done. And then we'll look at talking about your current role at Radio Nonsense. Brilliant. Over to you, Gary.
Thanks, Tom. Hi, Tannen.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Yes, good, thanks. Yeah, I'm slightly warmer than I want to be, but otherwise brilliant. It's the weather's surprisingly nice.
Don't curse it. Some of us are trying to catch the weather because we have to work during the day. So I'd lie, and it's still been good when I finish work. So don't curse anything. I need it to remain good when I finish work.
It's so, do you know what? I both went, what a lovely day, and also have complained about it three times. So I'm just a standard British hypocrite. That's my job.
Do you know what I think it is? See, when you live with diabetes, weather like this is not fun because you don't know where it's going to go. It's either going really low or sky high, and there's no winning, and you just look at it like, I'm in a roller coaster, and this roller coaster's not going to end today until it decides what it wants to do. So I do get the moaning about that. So as Tom highlighted in the introduction, you are a man of many talents, so all-rounder when it comes to things such as you do writing, production, presenting, comedy, and everything else in between. But what I think we'd all love to know is, how did we get here, and was it something you always wanted to do, or did you just fall into that sort of career? Was it something that just happened?
It's sort of been largely by accident. I think it's I always wanted to do acting, much to my parents' concern. Both my parents were child protection social workers and did really serious work. And both me and my brother's a DJ and a rapper, and I'm a comedian. We both clearly looked at what they did and went, nope, we are never doing that. That is not what we want. The stress levels of that job. But I always went to acting, and I ended up, I couldn't afford to go to drama school because it was really expensive. But I managed to, got a student loan to go to uni. And I did drama at uni, and as part of my drama course, there was a stand-up course, which I'm going to tell you about. It sounds like a proper Dossers course, but it was basically 8 hours a week and doing a gig at night. And I thought, well, do you know what? I've always wanted to give it a go. And of course, it wasn't just 8 hours a week. So you have to spend loads of time writing and preparing and working, and there's a lot of time outside sessions. But I got the very first time I went on stage, which was a bit of a cheat because it was in front of a lot of friends, and probably the nicest audience I could ever get. I just realized it was the best fun I'd ever had in my life. And I think getting a laugh, I got a laugh from my first joke, and I think I've never felt a feeling like it, really. And I just sort of thought from that moment on, right, I've got to do stand-up comedy. This has got to be my life. And then things have just kind of fallen into place since then. And as I said, I mean, that was 21 years ago. I did my first gig, and now I haven't actually done a gig for grown-ups for about a year because I've been too busy writing and presenting and doing lots of other things. And so it's kind of changed. And it's nice. I'm trying to embrace it. It's a little bit, every time it does, it's a bit scary, but it's quite nice to go, you know, that all these jobs lead to other things too.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing. It's your path taking you somewhere else. It doesn't mean you're never going to go back and do things on production-y sort of side of things in the younger market, which is always a market that's going to be there, but grown-up markets will always be there as well. So I think some of the things that we would love to know is, because you have kind of explained a lot about what you do and things, so living with diabetes in your job, how does this all work for you? Like, how do you manage a keep yourself in a level where you feel comfortable, that you're not going to go too high or too low? Because we all know hypers and hypos are the worst things you can get, because one makes you nippy and the other one makes you 9 times out of 10 tired, and you have no energy to do anything. So how do you get to that place where you're comfortable?
Yeah, it's. I don't know if I ever have. I mean, it's one of the. I'll answer your question directly, but I'm going to jump back a little bit just because. So one of the reasons my career has kind of changed is partly because in the pandemic, stand-up comedy disappeared for two years, and I was very lucky in that somebody that had happened to see me however long ago, you know, gave me an ad, said, "Would you like to script write for Hey Dougie?" And it was a lifesaver. I had anxiety attacks. I lost a year of work overnight because all my gigs disappeared, and I was really not sure what to do myself, and this kind of landed on my lap, and I've sort of rolled with it, and that was part of the reason for the change. But actually what I discovered, doing stand-up with diabetes was hard, because you don't have any normal hours, and there's no routine, and you're often up very late at night, eating late at night. It was terrible for my weight, it was terrible for health, long hours driving, which isn't good for my insulin going through ever, and I just sort of rolled with it and dealt with it as best I could. And there were definitely times on stage where my heckle comeback was terrible because actually my sugars were dropping or going too high, and the audience is there thinking, oh, he's rubbish. And actually it's like, I'm really not. I can't do anything about this. My brain's not working. But since the pandemic, and since I've now got a routine, because I mainly write and I'm mainly at home writing. And so I can actually fit in like going to the gym twice a week, and we walk my daughter to school and back twice a day, and that's how, you know, and I can really plan everything, and it's just done wonders for my diabetes. And I it's weird that it took me 20 years to realize that maybe stand-up comedy was an absolutely terrible career to have for my health, but it took me that long, and I think now I'm really embracing having slightly more normal hours. I think
Yeah, and I think that was something great to hear, is like your honesty on it, and like, because I think everybody was impacted by the COVID pandemic, and a lot of people did have that, the same feelings as you, the fear that everything that they knew was lost and gone. But it's good that you had somebody that was able to offer you something that gave you that opportunity to still keep your foot in the door and keep yourself going, which is a good thing to hear. So you've kind of answered this with Tom earlier in terms of how do you look after yourself when you are touring, in terms of like checking blood sugars and that. I assume that it's basically Libri's your lifesaver, and your insulin pump is your lifesaver. I do want to touch on a bit about what you were saying, and like how you were told you could get a hybrid closed loop, and then they've told you now you don't meet criteria.
Yeah, I mean, that was it's very recent. So I got my pump 3 weeks ago, and I've been very lucky to be away on holiday for 2 weeks, which is rare in my life. I never get to go on holiday, so it's been properly exciting. But I was really hoping that I'd get the closed loop like just before I went, and I could send it all up. And I got the email I got the pump, and it didn't come with any sensors. And I called Medtronic and said, you know, I thought I was meant to get sensors. They said, oh, you've not been signed up. And I contacted my hospital, which is the Whittington in North London. And they went, oh, no, you haven't been qualified for this. You just got the pump. And it's like, well, I don't know why I upgraded really, because I was on the 480 and the 780 is it 460? I can't remember what the numbers are.
The 640.
Yeah, that's it. And yeah. But the new the new one is good. It's lovely, but it kind of does the same as the old one if you're not using the sensors.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that many new features, so it feels a bit pointless. So I'm a bit fed up about it, but I'm gonna one of my jobs this week is to really get in contact with them and say, because I've had it confirmed by my diabetic specialist nurse and my doctor, but the whole team there has changed in the last year, which I'm quite sad about, because I really loved the two of them that were looking after me. I had such a great team there that really understood it, and my doctor in particular was the one that really worked with me how to deal with my gigs and how to deal with the highs that I was having. You know, she really helped me carefully monitor them, and she was the first person that even thought about looking at it, which was great. So I'm quite sad they've all gone, but now the new team seems to be instantly. And I'm being a bit harsh because I haven't actually had a meeting with any of them yet, so I don't really know what they're like. But on email, it's quite blunt, sort of, oh, you haven't qualified, which is, it's just always a bit of a knockback, I think.
Yeah. And for that, and your, obviously, we don't want to know about your mental status, but for that, mentally being told that you don't qualify, even although a doctor that you've had previously has told you that they feel you qualify for it, that must be kind of like a knock to your headspace, because I know hybrid closed loops are, they're so good, and especially I am on the 780G with a hybrid closed loop. It does actually, the benefit you get from this is it can prevent hypos. It also prevents highs because it has all detection in the sense that you see. So how does that, and like that headspace is somebody saying, a blunt email, which emails are never great because you never get the full tone. You read it how it sounds sometimes. Does that make you feel a little bit like as if somebody's pushed you, thought and said, oh, well, he doesn't do it, he'll be fine? Do you get that feeling, or do you think that they still are considerate of your mental headspace for that?
Yeah, no, it's funny. I mean, at the moment, as I said, it's new. I kind of more have a frustration because I feel like It's so often, I think, there's more effort required with sorting things out for yourself than there should be.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm very aware, like, you know, I'm such a big supporter of the NHS, and I'm very aware of how underfunded they are and very aware of all the issues they're having. But there are so many times you think, does this have to be so difficult? You know, why do I? And I think, you know, often I do sort of feel, I mean, whether or not it's lucky or not, because I'm being self-employed obviously means I've got zero job security, and that is quite scary at times. But I do often think if I had a proper job like yourself, I don't know how I'd go to half the appointments I have to go to.
It's difficult.
It's really, well, because they told me when I was getting the pump, they're like, I have to do a 3-hour Zoom session on a Tuesday. And I had to say to them, I can't, because it was in the school holidays and I had to look after my daughter, and I had like a script to get in. And I said, I can't be on Zoom for 3 hours. Like on I can't just do that. And they got sort of quite narky of me. And you thought, well, how many people can do that? It's hard.
This is the thing that I see where you're coming from this. So I had to do, when I got my pump, I had to go in face to face, but there was still COVID in the mix here. So I was petrified in the hospital when COVID was still active and you were being told, try and avoid people and do this and do this and do this. And I had to go into hospital to pick my pump up and do training. And then when you do your closed loop, it's like a 4-hour sit with somebody just basically talking through a set of slides. And you're like, yeah, I could read these slides in about 30 minutes and know how to do this without you having to hold my hand and say, this is what you need to do.
Yeah, well, it's like I said to Tom earlier that, you know, I got this really strict email from the diabetic nurse going, make sure you don't use your pump whatsoever. And my pump was out of warranty. So she said, just take some pens on holiday, which I wasn't going to do.
Yeah.
And she said, you've got to wait until you speak to the rep. And I looked at my pump and I set it all up in about 30 minutes. It was so easy.
This is the thing. But if you're already using that manufacturer's pump, the settings are already set there for you. It's the settings aren't going to ultimately change, because there is, you're right in that there is nothing different. The only difference is that the 780G now connects with the Guardian 4 sensor rather than Guardian 3. So it's a slight, there's no finger pricks needed. That's the difference with it. And I think that's where, like, they don't, I think healthcare professionals don't realise how difficult it is living with diabetes, considering you've got additional thoughts that you need to do. And somebody saying to you when you're about to go on a 2-week holiday that you just want to enjoy, saying, oh, take some pens, you'll be fine. And you're like, yeah, I don't want to take pens. I don't see the need for pens if I've got a pump sitting in front of me. So I kind of see that point with that. And I think that's something that needs to be addressed, is like sometimes how I am very, the same as you're grateful for the NHS, but sometimes how wording comes across about things, they treat us as if we don't know what our condition is when we're the ones that have to live with it every day and handle the backlash that comes with it. When you're not getting what you want or not seeing what you want to see. And I think that's where there's a miscommunication, and because they're rushed off their feet, they don't get the chance to sit with us and hear how we handle the situation and things. So I can I hear where you're going. There is a couple of more questions, and I'm going to leave one that's in the section that I'm kind of talking about now, because I would love, I think it would be a great one to end with, because it is asking a fun question, and I'm hoping you share what I'm going to ask with you, when I ask you it. But we would love to hear, can you tell us about your podcast career and all of the radio stuff that you do and all of this stuff? Like, how did that all happen? And, like, how does it feel to be able to do all of this sort of stuff?
It's an interesting question. I've not really thought about it, to be honest. I think podcasting's an interesting world, because you can kind of put out, like, whatever you put out, it is you. You know, it's not interfered with in the same way that interfered is probably the wrong word, but whenever you do stuff for TV, it goes through however many different people. And often, I mean, I had a real frustration with a lot of, I didn't do a lot of comedy for TV, but that was partly because jokes would often get cut and edited down to the point where they weren't funny anymore, and I'd get really angry with it. And one of the things I liked working with Frankie was he would kind of make sure that didn't happen as often as it should have done. But with a podcast, it's you. You can put out your idea kind of there as it is. And the only issue with that is everyone does it. And now there are so many podcasts, there's so many celebrity podcasts that, you know, to find your one, people have to work hard. Or how you let them know about it is very tricky. But I started my own sort of political comedy one, because I was very frustrated that I was doing it in gigs live, and it was going down brilliantly, but there was nothing on TV due to a number of reasons, really. So I started my own one, and it gained a following kind of quick, and I ran it for 7 years, but I had to put it out every week, and I was editing it all and finding all the interviews myself and writing all the material. It was a lot of work, and I found after 7 years I was sort of a bit done with it. But through that, I've ended up doing a kids podcast, which is going really well, and again gets listeners all over the world, and that's sort of just improv for kids. We get kids to answer and ask any question they like, and then I get comedians to not answer it properly whatsoever, and it's just joyful and silly, and that's led to hosting another podcast now with a company called Small Warder, who've hired me to co-host a podcast they do called Bust or Trust, which is about mysteries. So it's about the Yeti and Loch Ness Monster and stuff, and that's all for kids, and helping kids to critically think about, like, hearing the evidence, and they decide for themselves, and how do you analyse kind of stories, and I get to do that with a brilliant comedian called Athena Kuglenu. And so it's lovely. I think there's something really special about audio. You're in people's ears, and they listen to you regularly, and you become a part of their life, and that might sound a bit weird, but, like, the emails I get from kids are so lovely, and they're so joyful and so silly, and they're so often to do with the in-jokes we make. And it genuinely really cheers me up when they... I got one today saying, I'll just read this to you, actually. I've got it in front of me. It says, why is it that everyone cares so much about every snowflake being unique and different, but nobody realises the same is true for potatoes? They're all unique too. And that's their question. And you go, okay. That's from a 10-year-old, right? Brilliant.
Do you know, kids are actually great, but, like, their mind's so, it's not polluted with grown-up stuff, is the best word to say. They just ask questions, and they don't think about the question they're asking. Whereas if as a grown-up, I think we get to the point where we're like, yeah, I don't think I can ask that because that might come across as being this or that. Yeah. And I think that's the great thing is like kids have got this whole they don't care attitude and they'll just ask and hope that they get an answer. And if they don't get the answer they're hoping for, they'll ask it again. Until they get where they feel it should be. And I think that's a great thing. So I will ask you, how can people go about connecting with you? Where can they find you? And I do note that Tom has says not in a stalkery way, because Tom does like to stalk people and doubt everything about them. I mean, he is very good at that. So how can people go about finding you and getting to see some of your content and learn a little bit more about what you do and how you manage life with diabetes?
I mean, I'm quite easy to Google because I have a ridiculous name. And if you Google it, there is only me, which is good. I'm sort of, as I said, I'm not really on Twitter much, which is a shame because I love Twitter. And it was probably the platform I had most people kind of following me and the most I engaged with. And I'm not going to fully blame Elon Musk, but I've just sort of stepped away a bit. So I'm on Instagram a lot more. But I mean, really, you can find me. If you Google me, you'll probably find all my podcasts and my website and everything that I do very, very quickly. And drop me a line. I'm honestly very happy to talk to people. I sort of always feel a bit of a, it's weird, isn't it? Like I said, you know, it's such an individual condition. I always feel a bit of a fraud sometimes trying to pretend I know anything about diabetes because I know how I work. I haven't got a clue how anyone else works. And even then, I often don't know how I work either. I don't get it right, you know.
Hit the nail in the head. I think we think that there's a rule book for diabetes. There is no rule book. What might work for me might not work for you. What might work for you might not work for me. And that's the thing. Everybody's perspective and how they handle diabetes and how they walk the path and take the journey with it is unique to them. And all you can do is offer advice. And I think that that's all that everybody needs to remember, that the community needs to know. We are offering advice of what works for us. Just because we know it works for us, we can't guarantee it's going to work for you. I mean, I can do things that people would say, oh, yeah, that would never work. And I'm like, works for me, and that's how I like to do it. And I think that's the great thing with diabetes is the community is so vast, but there's so many perspectives in it, and we can all learn different things and try new things and say, well, do you know what? That was a mistake, and I'll know not to do that next time. And that's what's great about diabetes. There's always a learning experience available with it.
Absolutely. I'm going to tell you, this is a weird one. My dad's type 2. So obviously there are a number of differences, but he has a strange thing where when he eats potatoes, his sugars drop. And I can't figure that out for the life of me.
I would love for that to happen.
Yeah, me too. I'm so jealous.
Every time I look at a potato, my blood sugars are just like, yeah, you're going to have it with you. You're not even getting to eat the potato. This is it. Let's go. And you're looking and you're like, my number was like 5.5. And then I looked at a potato and it's now like 7.2. I can't have a potato tonight because it's going to take me out of range. And that's the thing. It's like, it's crazy how some people's can eat some things. I mean, I can sit and eat a bag of grapes and not need to take insulin for it.
Oh,
but I eat like half a digestive and my blood sugars are like pinking up to 16, 17. I'm like, it's half a digestive. I've just ate like a bag of grapes and I've had no bother.
It's not fair, is it?
And double digits. And I'm like, yeah, it's unfair. So the final question that I do want to ask, because I know that we are on a time limit and I don't want to keep you behind for too long, is for a bit of fun, we would love to hear with one of your favourite jokes or gags that you like to use in your shows, and it can be linked to anything you want. So if one of your favourite gags is about diabetes, feel free to do it. Nobody will take any offence. Or if it's something like crazy out there, feel free to do it. I'm sure everybody will love to hear what your favourite joke is.
That's tricky. Well,
I'm pouring you on your spot here. I never told you about this, did I?
Well, the biggest problem is that I haven't been doing many adult gigs, so I've got lots of kids jokes in my brain. I mean,
that's fine.
Yeah.
Well, I can do an adult gag for you, but I also warn you, it's got a tiny bit of swearing. Can I do a little? It's very minor swearing. Is that allowed? Or is that not allowed?
Can you use an alternative word so I can not have to? Edit the podcast too much.
Do you know what? I'll do the kids' version of it, which is simply that because I do a version of this for adults and a version of this for kids, which is that I tell kids, the kids' version is that I tell them that the kids are always up stupid time. They always get up stupid early and they always want to go to bed so late. And that's why your grown-ups need coffee. But actually, grown-ups tell you they need coffee to keep them awake. It doesn't do that. It just makes them need to poo unexpectedly. And then they have to stay awake out of fear. And that's a current game. So there you go. That's the clean kids' version.
I think that we all know what the adult's version is.
There you go. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And I can all master that, the gist of it.
Touring back 2024.
So I don't know if there is anything else you want to ask Tom or anything, or is that us?
I think that was us pretty much covered. Was there anything else you wanted to add, Tenin, or there's one final question I'll ask?
I don't know. This has been lots of fun. There's lots of things, as I said, I don't sort of think about them with diabetes. It's been so much a part of my life that you kind of just get on with it. And then it's only when you look back on it and go, what was I doing? or how did I get through that bit? And, you know, I don't think I stop to think about it enough, and I probably should. But I think it was at that TED Talk, someone said, we make, is it 180 decisions a day on diabetes? And I thought, yeah. Oh my God, I don't think it ever really crossed my mind how much I think about it every day.
Yeah.
And how ridiculous that is, really.
On top of everything
else. I never sit there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's exhausting, isn't it? It's really exhausting.
People wonder why, this is my favourite bit, people wonder why we are always tired. Would you not be tired if you were having to do an additional 180 thoughts in between all of the other noise that has to happen? But the 180 thoughts are always at the forefront of everything you're doing, because you're like, how is this going to impact my diabetes?
Yeah, well, I just keep thinking I probably could have written a book by now. I could have, if I hadn't had to have those 180 thoughts, I could have had 180 extra jokes a day. That would have been amazing.
There's still time. You can write that book.
There is still time.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Tina. I think one final question from us. Thank you, Gary, for that amazing section talking about your career and how it's impact, or how your diabetes impacts and that sort of stuff. Last question is, if I can find it, what tips and advice would you give to someone who's listening right now, whether it's a child or a parent, someone who's living with diabetes? What sort of advice would you give them if they're listening now or listen back on the podcast, whatever?
That's a very good question. I don't know if it's tips or right. I, as I said sort of earlier, I think what I've learned with this is that you've got, I mean, you've got to take care of yourself. You've got to mind it, but really it's not the worst condition we could have. You can be flexible with it. And I know that doesn't account for everyone. I'm very aware some people can't, and some people got to, you know, I feel like I've got to cover all bases here. It's harder for some people than others. But I do feel like I've been very lucky, you know, in a way to have the career I've had with diabetes. And I think if I'd had another condition, I wouldn't have been able to do it. But I can travel around the world with a pen or with a pump, or, you know, I can go on stage with my Libra on and do all these things. And it's there's something that's been really exciting about that, you know. And I think feel very lucky that you know, as long as I've got my head switched on, I can manage it and do it. And it's not something that means, you know, I can't, you know, I've not got something that's debilitating in another way. So I try and be positive about it, even if it's really annoying sometimes.
Absolutely, looking at the sort of positive outlooks of it, isn't it amazing? Thank you so much. So Tin, and thank you so much for joining Diabetes Chat today. It's been great fun. I really enjoyed it. So guys, you can check it out on our website, diabeteschat.net, and listen back on our YouTube channel as well. So thank you so much, Tin, today.
Thanks tons for having me. It's been a pleasure.
So before we do go, though, I'd love for you to do one or two sort of recordings for a bit of fun, and then I'll strip this off. Well, not strip this off. I will strip the editing and strip this off.
I was a bit worried about what you're going to do then. Right.
Well, it is quite hot today.
That's quite the finale to the
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
I will say this again. I will re-edit and I'll put it into our funky tune, and we will play it across our diabetes chat. So I don't know what you want to say. I don't know, like, hi, it's Tiernan Duyeb, and you're listening to Diabetes Chat. I don't know. Did I pronounce your surname right?
You did. That was really good. I'm very impressed. It's like, I've always said Duyeb, and my cousin recently told me I've been saying it wrong my whole life. So I've got no real idea. So there you go. There's confused origins of it, but no real idea. Duyeb is perfect. So if I go for sort of I'm Tiernan Duyeb, like, but you basically want a little intro to the show, yeah?
Yeah, go for it.
Cool. Hi, I'm Tiernan Duyeb. Are you ready for talking about the highs and the lows of diabetes? It's 8 p.m. It's Diabetes Chat.
Yes.
Was that okay? Was that good?
That was amazing. That was great. Great.
Hooray! That's what I wanted.
We're a voluntary community, by the way. We don't chat. We don't pay.
Next time.
No, yeah, absolutely. And what about one? You could maybe. I'm giving you work now. I don't know. Could you introduce our guest speaker chats? So obviously you're one of our guest speakers tonight, but we actually haven't got a jingle for our guest speaker chat. But could you come up with something like? It's time for our diabetes guest speaker. I don't know. I'm putting you on the spot here now.
Yeah. Let me. I'm trying to think. What other good things you could say about a guest speaker? What else I could refer to a guest speaker as that's diabetic? It's time to inject the guest speaker chat straight to your brain. Something like that. No, that's rubbish, isn't it? It should be straight to your ears. Does that not work? Maybe that's too full on. Maybe no one wants injections in their ears. I've probably got the community completely wrong. It's time for the guest speaker chat.
We'll keep it simple.
I overcomplicated it.
We'll keep it clean before we get people emailing and going saying, I'm injecting myself with insulin in my ear now after listening to your jingle.
I feel like I could land in all sorts of trouble. It's not worth it. It's not worth the lawsuits.
Diabetes Chat do not advocate for what we've just discussed. So thank you so much, Tiernan, for coming on to tonight's chat. I know we've been talking offline for the last couple of months. Obviously, we had the great privilege, or I had the great privilege, I can't even speak, of catching up with you in London. Honestly, thank you for everything that you do for the social media world, all the amazing stuff with the podcast. I'm going to have to definitely check it out, and I will be watching this week. I will watch Hey Dougie, and I'll tweet it out. I'll watch you on my son, and
I've got to promote. Yeah, September 25th, I play it. It'll be the recipe badge. That is my next Hey Dougie episode. I'm so excited about it. So that will be in three weeks' time. Is my next one. Yeah.
Is it literally the whole episode is like written by you? Like you've done the whole bit. Wow.
That's my whole script. Yeah. So I've done the accessories badge, the recipe badge, and I'll have one more coming in a little while as well. So yeah, it's very exciting.
Brilliant stuff, guys. So remember, go check Tiernan out on his website, Google him, CBBS, Hey Dougie, check out Frankie Ball, and you'll be laughing away to that and realizing it's Tiernan's jokes as well. And also check him on Fresh Meat. I need to go check that out. Like,
it's so brief. It's so brief. I will, yeah.
But above all, go check them out on the Comedy Clubs of Kids podcast, the Radio Nonsense. Please go check it out. All right, buddy, thank you so much for tonight. It's been really, really fun. Appreciate your time.
Thanks very much. Take care.